Running a call center sales team is definitely filled with challenges, but at the same time, can be very rewarding. There is no manual for how to win the call center sales game, which is why this podcast exists. As your guide, our goal is to help you overcome challenges, discover new tools, innovate where possible, and hear stories from others who have made it to the top of the call center mountain. Welcome to the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast with your host, Jason Cutter.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another special guest episode of the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast. I am excited for the second time on the show. I'm having someone from the sales education space. And I think this is super fascinating for many reasons, which I'm going to dive into with this guest. So today I have Lef Bonney from the FSU Sales Institute program. So he's a professor of sales and marketing, which I think is awesome and amazing. So basically, after working in sales and leading sales teams for the better part of a decade, he went back to grad school, got a PhD in marketing and organizational communication, and now his role with the FSU Sales Institute, he's helping train the next generation of salespeople, as well as, which is a big component of what they do, which we're also going to talk about, conducts a lot of cutting-edge research on what truly separates great salespeople from everyone else, which I think is fascinating. Lef, welcome to the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast.
Awesome, Jason. It's great to be here. I told people when I got into this business a long time ago, I want to do everything possible to avoid the ivory tower that exists in universities, and talking to great influencers like yourself in the sales space is how we do those kinds of things. So it's a privilege for me to be on. I appreciate it.
And it's interesting, before we hit record on this, there's always the chat beforehand. And I was updating you about some things because I was reaching out to some other universities. And it's interesting, the ones that are in the ivory tower and feel like they're the educators and they're the all-knowing. And then there's ones like yourself, which are so responsive. We've had some great conversations and you are on the educational side and institutional side from there, but same path, kind of like myself, which is, let's just help the whole profession get better and influence future generations and do the research and just change the way sales is done in a better way. And so the moment we talked the first time, I knew we were going to have fun here on the show and hit it off. Tell me a little bit about, because this part is fascinating to me, how a university puts together and the basics of running a program to teach people sales, which is constantly debated as, is it an art? Is it a science? How do you turn that into a program?
Yeah, great question. And I'll even kind of go maybe one step before that and say, why did we start doing it? Because there's really some fascinating statistics from some folks. There's another organization called the Sales Education Foundation. And they were one of the sort of the front runners, pioneers of trying to help sales education break into colleges, go into universities. And they had some pretty interesting data that says 80% of all marketing majors are going to be in sales. Whether on that day in the sales class, when you say how many people are going to go into sales, strangely, 80% of the marketing majors' hands don't go up. They don't think they're going into sales. But, you know, there's bad news for marketing majors to say to them, listen, P&G is not going to hire you to come run and manage their toothpaste portfolio without understanding the business and having sold it first. Right. And so these marketing students get pushed into sales pretty quickly. Interesting to build on that from the sales education statistics, 65% of all College of Business majors are going to go into sales. Mm-hmm. And this is a little surprising sort of to lots of people. But when you think about it, if I'm in finance and I'm going to go work for Merrill Lynch as a financial advisor, that's a sales job, right? And even if I'm a finance major and I want to go on and be in mergers and acquisitions, there's so much selling that has to go into that. It's incredible. And then the ones that usually raise their hand and they say, well, I'm accounting. You can't stump me. Accountants will never be in sales. And I said, go ask a partner at P&G or Deloitte what they do. Their job as partners is to go sell accounting. They're not doing accounting, they're selling accounting. And so what happened was colleges of business were seeing this trend of, hey, our students go into sales, but no one's learning sales. We don't teach it. Academia is pretty slow to react to the market, so to speak. I'll say after a number of decades of companies telling colleges of business, we need kids with sales skills, did it finally start to sort of ring home? So I would say the trend really started gaining speed in the 2005 to 2010 is where you started seeing lots of sort of the people programs beginning. And they typically began, but then we ran into a second problem. There are no PhDs in sales, at least there weren't in 2000 or 2005. There are very few. And so it's like, who are we going to get to teach these courses? Because the model is go find a PhD, a doctor to come teach classes, and they didn't exist. So most sales programs started, Jason, with a former salesperson who said, hey, I'm retired, or I want to slow down, whatever it is. And they moved and said, you know, this sounds like a fun job to, you know, start teaching sales at a university. So most programs started as a one-man, one-woman band of a former sales executive or salesperson starting to teach a couple of classes. And then competitive forces tend to do. Universities start saying, okay, we not only want to have a sales program, we want to have a large sales program. And now we do want to go find PhDs or people who at least have former sales experience who have PhDs, which was my case. And they said, let's start bringing those folks in to start building what looks more like a formal sort of sales curriculum inside the business school. So as that ramped up, now you go from one class to maybe two or three classes focused on sales. And then the schools that said, nope, we not only want to be large, we want to be some of the best in the country or in the world. Now they're offering actual majors in sales. So FSU, it's been a fun ride for 13 years. We are one of those schools. Kids can graduate with a degree in professional selling from Florida State. And then there's probably about another 80 schools out there that have it as an actual major.
Which is absolutely wild and bonkers. It's interesting because when I wrote my book, Selling with Authentic Persuasion, I wrote the first draft of it and it was like, no schools offer anything to do with sales. And then I started hearing about these and actually went in before it was finally like the final edit and revised it to, I think I might've said no one offers a degree in it. And that was in 2020. When I finished editing and then it was published. And I'm guessing that was also wrong. And I just didn't know enough to know. But it's just interesting, right? To think of this degree and who it's for, because I think what's interesting, and I want to hear your thoughts on this, your experience, as well as the research and what it shows, is the debate or the classic of the natural born sales versus person versus the one who's made, right? And it sounds like it's the marketing major who then ends up in sales because they want to do marketing. And the company says, hey, you're in sales, where they're like, they didn't plan on it. They didn't want to be kind of like a guy like me with a marine biology degree. But you have those people who like sales, knew they wanted to be in sales from an early age. And part of that is they want to be in sales because they don't fit the model of school, structured education, college, right? Like they're on their own path. And sales is a great vehicle for that. So what do you see for people entering your kind of program? Who is it successful for? Like, how does that whole natural born versus made salesperson fit right into it?
So we have about 400 sales majors at FSU. It is a very diverse in terms of how they got there. The ones who said very early in their college career. So at FSU, you declare your major between sophomore and junior year. And so the kids who are moving from sophomores to junior saying right out of the gate, I know I want to be a sales major. It's typically the mom and dad are in sales, brother, mm-hmm. sister in sales. You know, they know someone who's been very successful as a sales career, or they've had a college colleague, a peer, go through the program and then rave about the, here are the benefits of doing this. But the point is that usually it's a referral, right? It's just like sales. They're ready to buy into the sales yeah. program because of a referral. But that's probably 25%. So I would say the other few hundred are actually sitting in that, say, that first sales class, because all marketing majors at FSU are required to take the intro to sales course. And marketing, by the way, is a huge major on our campus. We have almost 3,000 marketing majors. Wow. So that's 3,000 people going through the sales course at some point. There's a lot of opportunity to change minds. And we tell people in that class, like, listen, I don't really care if you go into sales or not, but I just want to change your mind about what it is. Because we've all heard the stereotypes of everyone still thinks sales has that negative stereotypes. And our college kids are no different. And I would say majority of kids who go on into the sales major are coming from that intro class, and we did our job. They changed their mind and said, wow, I had no idea that's what professional selling really looked like. And I can see myself in that now that I realize it's not a dirty word to be a salesperson. So did that answer your question? I mean, you know,
yeah.
you know, there really aren't a lot of, hey, I'm made for this, kids.
Well, and I would guess is the I am made for this kids are also, again, the ones who might not go to college, might go into a sales role. They don't see themselves following the higher education path. I was going to say the standard path, but there's no standard path. But like, they don't see themselves going that path because they're entrepreneur, they're sales, they're focused on something like that, right? Like a, you know, anyone's familiar, like a Gary V type person. He knew what he wanted to do early on. He fell into business with the family business, and then like, he's got that path. Those ones you'll probably never see, but then it's interesting to hear that breakdown. I love the thought of that introduction to sales class and helping change people's minds. I mean, I wish that was something that was taught in, let's say, high school. And then also, of course, the, you know, should be teaching kids finance and money and emotional intelligence and things like that. But that's a whole nother discussion. So what is some of the biggest challenges you see that they're struggling with in either understanding it or like the misconceptions? You said like sales is a dirty word. What kind of shift do they have to make, or what happens in their college career if they're going to be successful going to sales?
Well, yeah, I think there's several sort of points there. I think one of the things that this is just sort of an awakening that happens for a lot of kids, business to business, they just don't realize even exists, right? I mean, these, I hate to say it, but they're kids, and that, you know, every exposure they've had, even in the sales world, has usually been like a retail sales interaction, you know, something B2C. And so when you help them understand, wait a second, you're telling me it might take months to sell something and it's not a one time, I either have to land the sale or not, which leads a lot to the sometimes sleazy behavior because the pressure is on. But you mean to tell me I can be a consultant to my customer for 4 or 5 months, bring them lots of resources, ideas, shape the solution. I can do all those things. And then if they like me, they'll say yes. And wow, that sounds like a really cool thing to do for companies. And you're just like, yes, it's, you know, that is the fun part of sales, is helping solve problems for customers. And so just getting them past that, like, hey, there's a world that operates outside of most everybody's purview in this B2B space, with a lot of really fun stuff happening behind the scenes. That's one hurdle, is getting the kids to sort of realize there are things happening that they don't normally see, and that it's a very different world than even something like a retail sale. Obviously, they're just really reluctant with the whole, I got to go talk to somebody I've never met. And I think that's a big part of why the kids who go out of these programs are so successful, is because if nothing else, they're just gaining confidence in social interactions. And I had a student stand in front of my class yesterday talking about her experiences in the sales program, sort of an outgoing student telling the incoming student, here's what to expect. And she said just that. She said, I was terrified to walk into a role play. And she said, right now, if anybody wanted to come up to the front of this room and do a role play with me, I'd, no problems, let's do it, right? So she said that level of confidence change in me has just made all the difference in the world. And I think that's rolls right into their success post college, because even people who say, I want to go into sales, if they haven't had that sort of school of hard knocks, get beat around in a social interaction, one-on-one interaction kind of way, they still have a steep curve to get up in their first few years of working out in the real world. Our students have already been through all that, right? They don't mind hearing, we tell them no a lot through the role plays and through the, and so they're fine. It's like they have that confidence to go out and have those one-on-one. So I think understanding sort of the, what does the business world and professional sales really look like, changing that perception. And then also the, hey, this isn't so scary to go have a conversation with somebody about their needs and challenges and how you can help. If you can go do that well, people will want to talk to you. You don't have to be fearful that I'm bugging a customer. So those are two probably of the biggest ones. I think you have to get people over the hump.
Yeah. And I think that confidence is huge. I mean, obviously confidence in public speaking, like your student who stood up in front of the class, that's huge for most people, especially if they didn't think that was the path, right? There's the people who are naturally or more comfortable in front of people, or more comfortable just talking to random people. Those are the natural born kind of extroverted type people. And then there's the others who are not. And then they just build that confidence, and then they can use that in all ways. And I could see that being really valuable, again, not just in a generational thing where we feel like the younger generation, because of technology, they don't talk to anybody. They don't want to call anybody. They don't want to meet anybody. They don't do anything in person, which fundamentally isn't a true stereotype. But no matter what, that younger generation being comfortable with speaking in public, in front of groups, role playing, being able to think on the fly, having that confidence. And then I love what you said about them understanding there's a whole other world out there. Like, I feel like even at my age, I'm finding out about businesses and careers and industries, right, and jobs where it's like, I didn't know that was a thing. And I think what's really a disservice as well is this career canceling model we have in high school, which says, okay, take this test and here's the kind of jobs you could do. But like, that doesn't scratch the surface of everything that's possible, which you can't do anyway. You know, it's just understanding. Just because you went to the mall or you went to a store and bought a cell phone, like, that's not sales. That's not all of what sales includes for everybody.
Yeah. And I think most sales programs across the country have said, you know, we don't have to tackle that challenge on our own. As you and I were talking in the lead up to our session today, most of us are bringing companies in to help describe what does this world look like that we don't see behind the scenes all the time. And so, because obviously those companies can tell the story better than we can. And like you said, we get sponsors who are companies that, you know, come into the classroom and I'm like, wow, I never gave any thought to that as an entire industry full of salespeople running around doing that.
That's awesome.
So, and I think that goes back to my story about how programs got started. Because I think there are still a lot of these sort of former salespeople and former sales executives still hanging around that helped start the programs back in the early 2000s. And they all still have that perspective of, hey, don't be ivory tower, make it real world. Let's bring lots of companies in. And so one of the things we always get, at least at FSU, in terms of appreciation from our students is, hey, you're the only class that's brought in companies. Right, which is a bit of an indictment of College of Business Education, but I guess also an advantage for us in the sales program that they say, we appreciate that you're trying to expose us to different points of view on the world of business.
Yeah, that's both sad and awesome, both at the same time, for those reasons you mentioned. And it's funny because now that you put it that way about bringing in the companies, I'm thinking of like the scene from elementary school where it's like, bring your parent in, and it's the firefighter telling everyone what firefighters do, and policemen and teacher and whatnot, you know, just exposing the world of what a career opportunities are out there to people. So I think that's interesting. With what you're focused on and one, you know, what you're teaching, I know one of the things that you had mentioned to me is that it just seems to be like salespeople are taught the same things, or they're taught to be effective in like the classic sales model, or not even just like one particular sales model, but all sales models that seem to just produce people that are just doing the same, or they're just end up being mediocre. And I don't mean like universities teaching that. I'm talking about like companies and what you're seeing at that level. Where do you really see that at play? And then obviously there's the research side of what you guys do. And then there's how you're teaching to help people differentiate themselves as a sales professional.
So that's a huge question that, again, you said, it's not just a university phenomenon. My little name for it is called selling to the stalemate. You know, when I do research on companies and I say, hey, have you guys ever done sales training? And people are like, oh, you know, we've put everybody through the Sandler program, or we put everybody through the Miller-Hyman program, or insert sales training of choice, right? And then as a researcher, I'll go across the street to their competitor, because I'm not trying to do anything sneaky, but I want multiple perspectives, and sometimes within the same industry. So I'll go across the street to the competitor. And they're saying, oh, we've just gotten through doing the Miller-Hyman program or the Sandler program. And I'm thinking, you know, that's good, I guess, that we are giving the salespeople training. But, you know, two competing companies just gave each other the same training. Then to a customer, what they see as an experience with a salesperson is the exact same thing. It's better than it was 5 years ago or a year ago.
But it's theoretically,
it's not differentiated. It's a better conversation, but not a differentiated conversation. So in one of my interviews with somebody who buys a lot of stuff, he said, if one more person comes in and tries to spin sell me, I'm going to lose my mind. You know, he said, because I've been in this business for 30 years. We've just done an entire feasibility study internally, looking at what our problems and challenges are, what they're worth to us, which one should we tackle first, which one should we tackle second. He's like, I have all that on a one pager. I don't need
your Challenger sale or your pain submarine, or
I don't need you rehashing all that, right? Like, and he says, I share the one pager with people and they still come right back with, what keeps you up at night? The piece of paper I just gave you, right? And so his point was like, hey, you know, every sales book says don't be a product seller. He's like, but I need a product seller. Like, I need you to explain to me, now that I've identified my problem and challenge, why your product is the right one, how it's going to solve it, what's it cost. Like, I need you to be convincing to me that you have the right solution. And that's a product sale, right? So I just say all that to say, I do think consultative selling is overtrained in the industry. I think that companies are thinking about effectiveness when they train and not differentiation. in the sense that we want our sellers to have better conversations. But again, if that conversation is still just like everybody else's conversation, it doesn't help a customer see who should I pick. And so I say all that to say now we're seeing that sort of roll into sales programs, like that problem. Because as you know, trainers, educators, we're pulling a lot from the real world as right. to, hey, here's what we're going to train. So I bet if we did a poll, we would find 85% of universities with the sales program are training something very similar to SPIN training, which is good foundational sales training. But it also is starting to condition these students that, hey, no matter what, when you go out to the real world, make sure you ask situation, problem, implication, needs questions. And what we're getting companies tell us is, hey, guys, the world's changing pretty fast and you're kicking out SPIN robots or consultative robots and it doesn't fit what we do. So can you change it up a little? And so that's where I think we all are a little bit, you know, I don't know if at a crossroads is the right quote, but we're starting because again, academics do tend to move slower than industry, but we are starting to have these sort of thought-provoking conversations at our own conferences and meetings where it's like, are we teaching the right stuff as the world move to a place where we also need to start helping kids understand that maybe one size fits all selling is not the right thing here. So it'll be interesting to see where sales curriculum goes. It'll be interesting to see where sales training goes as a part of this.
I just made a bunch of notes to myself. Super fascinating. this conversation is all about you. Otherwise, I would go on my thoughts about that as well. But it is interesting because the stuff that I focus on with people is more the foundational. It's not like, here's this cookie cutter process and do this thing. Here's some pillars. Focus on this. And I love your example, which is the potential customer, the buyer to be, already knows what keeps them up at night. They know what the problem is. They know who is involved. They know what they're looking for. They just haven't found it yet. And I'm just picturing those salespeople just still trying to go through what they've been taught because they're, like you said, they're robots, not humans, having a sales experience or leading somebody through a sales experience. Because many times I've gotten a phone call with that kind of person who says, I know exactly what I need. Here is our problem. Here's what we need. Okay, sounds good. Here's what it's going to cost, right? Like let's go into the demo or let's go into just, okay.
Right.
But that breaks all the rules of the processes to be. So I love that you're aware of it. Obviously, there's the speed at which you can change the direction of the ship, especially in the higher education sense. But first part is admitting that there's a problem and then you can do something about it. And I think that's interesting. Where do you see, because obviously you're talking about salespeople and helping the future generation of the future sales professionals we all want to be interacting with, hopefully as customers, right? So that we get away from the classic old model that most people tolerate but don't enjoy. Where does that fit in with leadership? Because one of the things that I see, and maybe you guys, I don't know if you address this or not, or what your research might show, is the classic model is, hey, you were good in sales. Now you're being promoted. Now lead this team to success. And hopefully you know how to lead as well as you did sell, because we're also not going to help you there either.
Yeah, that's a great point. And we don't address it well in universities for a number of reasons. One is we all usually are fairly resource strapped, resource starved. And so our mission of training the undergraduate rep is usually the core mission of every sales university sales program. So then the logical next step, and it makes sense in some ways too, like it doesn't make any sense to train a 22-year-old on sales management because we all know they're not getting that job for another 3 to 4 or 5 years, right?
Hopefully not.
Hopefully not. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So where I'm going with this is we are starting to get lots of phone calls. Do you offer a master's degree in sales management, right? Because that's the logical way to do this is train them in undergrad selling, let them go off and make their mark in the sales world. They're about to get promoted or they need additional training. And now here we are ready to help them with that. And in a utopian, real, you know, perfect world, we would have the resources to say, well, thanks for coming back. We have an MBA program, master's level course in sales leadership and management. I think there's one or two that do out of all those 85 that are teaching degrees in sales. And it's just it's a resource problem of I don't have the resources to move out of undergraduate selling education into master's level. So that's another one of those conversations that I see us having at conferences and things is how do we take what we do and move it to a master's level that would be now catering and serving a manager in the sales world. So I guess it's a long-winded way of saying we don't teach it.
Yeah.
not well. We do still expose the undergrads. Like, so at FSU, there is a sales management course that they have to take as a part of, and it's sort of a half sales leadership, half sales operations. So okay. Helping them understand how does a sales organization function, and then what is your manager trying to do when he's coaching or she's coaching and leading you in your day-to-day sales effort. So they get exposure to it, to actually serve the leader community. We don't do it well.
And I could see the challenge with that higher level sales management, whether that's like a master's or whatever that looks like, is just the speed, right? Because really what you want is somebody who's finished that program so that they're an amazing manager and leader in your organization, which means you got to start them 2 years before you need them, which is a long farm league and an expensive risk, because what if they don't work out for your company and then, you know, you've invested? Put them in the seat of manager and then you start them in the education between now and even the end of their first semester. What are they doing for you and how well is that going? Right. And so, yeah, I could see that being an interesting balance. So obviously you're focusing on salespeople, right? And then there's the buyers, like you said, that don't want necessarily the same cookie cutter stuff. What else are you training the future salespeople on? Buyers, buyer behaviors, consumers, just like from that side about how people might be buying different now than, especially in a general, like not dedicated to one kind of sales process.
So we do spend a lot of time on buyer behavior, talking about, you know, just even again, this goes back to that students give no thought to how does, you know, Delta Airlines buy new computers for their whole company? That's just never crossed their mind. What would they do? It's not like they call Best Buy and say, we need 30,000 computers.
When Amazon, right? You just go on Amazon add a bunch to your cart, right? No.
Yeah. The buy now, the $15 million computer purchase, buy now. And so we talk a lot about sales cycles and buying cycles, and we spend an awful lot of time in the normal that, hey, listen, it's usually a team of people. They're usually serving different roles, you know, economic buyer versus influencer, technical influencer, ultimate decision maker. In our courses, they have to sort of, we give them a lot of case studies and we make them do account mapping and sort of thinking through like, okay, from what you've read here, what's this person's role and what are their hot buttons? And, you know, what are we going to have to do differently when we get in meetings with those people than say someone else? So some of our upper level courses really start to take on more of the strategic aspects of thinking through a pretty significant organizational purchase and how do we navigate it? So it's not just one-on-one sales skills. It's also the big picture sort of account management kinds of discussions as well.
Makes sense. So this podcast is for people who are running call center, inside telephone sales, B2C, B2B. Obviously, we're talking more about people who are going to go to school to learn B2B sales, if they're going to put that into their education, not necessarily because they might go, like you said, to Merrill Lynch and they're doing B2C, but they're learning the sales, the marketing, kind of all these different aspects. Somebody's going to come out of this program and somebody listening to this podcast could be like, I want to hire these kind of students, right? You talked about sponsorship and things like that involved. My question is more from not using that as the farm league itself, but if somebody has a bachelor's in sales or a marketing degree with an emphasis or something in sales for the universities, the schools that don't have a full-on degree in it.
Right.
What should that business owner, that recruiter, that manager know? What should they feel like that person is going to know what to do? And then where are they still going to need help?
Yeah. And so to your call center audience, a couple of quick points. One is we aren't exclusive B2B. I mean, we have an awful lot. I would say it's probably 70% of the sponsors and people who recruit our students are in B2B and the other 30% are B2C. So I don't want to scare people off from, I'm in a B2C business, so universities aren't the place to go. That's not what I'm saying at all. All I was trying to point across earlier was that, hey, we have to win the B2B battle. We have to get the kids to understand it's there.
But they don't even know it exists.
They don't even know it exists, but that doesn't mean that's where they land. And the other aspect of it is too, is listen, the model now is you start people in an inside sales role. I mean, I would say when I got in this business again in 2008 was my first year at FSU. I would say 90% of our students were getting placed almost directly into outside sales roles. I mean, they would still go through their maybe 6 month training periods or whatever, but they were being hired to move straight into outside sales roles. I would say today it's probably gone close to 80-20. 80% of the students are getting hired for inside sales roles and only 20% are ever going to go straight to a field sales role. Mm. Because inside sales, and you're probably aware of, I mean, you know, inside sales as a role is growing faster than outside sales. And it certainly was up until COVID. Of course, a good friend of mine, Tim Reister at Corporate Vision, says, hey, we're all in inside sales now. It's like COVID almost made it where inside sales is the norm, not outside sales. I just say all that to say, you know, our kids are expecting to go into call centers. They're expecting to go into customer service roles. They're expecting to go into an inside sales support role because they know that's the path now. And so to your point about what do you say if you're trying to recruit these kids, I think in the old days, people kind of ducked that conversation a little bit because it's like, oh, all my buddies are going straight into outside sales and you're telling me you're going to hire me for an inside sales role. I don't want to come work there. And now that's not that you don't have to have that conversation that way. They are expecting to learn the business in a call center or an inside sales role, something like that. So,
And really the other part too, that I think is important is if you're a manager hiring someone who has some kind of formal higher education in sales, what should you kind of get a sense of what they know sales wise without assuming they know everything? You're just going to hire someone out of the box. They're just going to run. And like, where are you continuing on and where do you need to still give them training and guidance?
I don't see our sales kids skipping sales training. In other words, companies are still saying, hey, there's still our lingo that we want you to learn. And there's still our process that we want you to follow. And there's still our, you know, presentations that we want you to make. And so we've given them the foundational skills to be successful, but they still need what the company is feeding them in those training engagements. I do say we do get kids who say they move me through it quicker, you know? Mm. So if there was like an online training component or an in the field, you know, spend a couple of weeks in the field, they're bringing them back quicker and moving them to the next stage faster because it's like, okay, you kids get this, let's move on.
And do you think that's fair? Do you think that's a good thing for businesses to then, you know, make that assumption? Or are they, you know, is that assuming too much of what somebody needs still?
No, I think it's fair. I mean, I think the kids are getting sort of still getting evaluated. The what are they allowed to skip or what are they allowed to move through faster, I think is still being on a sort of person by person basis. Okay. And the companies are still sort of evaluating them on that. What the kids want to hear, by the way, is it's like, hey, I want to know what's my next job. If I'm really good at that inside sales job, if I'm really good at that call center job, what's next? That's the selling. That's where the sort of the, okay, this now we start to see differentiation in the opportunity for these students. And so for anyone who wants to recruit a student out of a university program, you don't have to sugarcoat the first job. I think most of us do a good job telling kids, listen, first 2 years of sales is hard. It's just hard knock. So don't try to think you're going to step into some cush, you know, sales role right out of the gate. Just expect it. But what you should be asking about is, okay, when I survive it and I succeed in it, then what's next? And I think that's where you sort of win the day with a student of here's where you're going to go after the indoctrination, I guess is the scary word to use, but
which makes sense because if you look at it from a student's perspective who went to school, looking at the degree and the time spent as an investment, then it's like, okay, I understand I got to pay some dues, but if I'm going to invest it and learn this, I'm going further or want more beyond the sales role, maybe, you know, and what does the potential future look like? I think that's fascinating because we kind of touched on it, but then I just got us all excited about talking about the programs and kind of what the future is like. Any other exciting or interesting or surprising research findings? Because I know you've got a lot of that in your head and you really love that part as well.
And that was exactly where I was about to go. And actually speaking to your audience, before I answer that question, I'll say to them, hey, even if you're not interested in hiring students out of these programs, engage a university sales program because of what you just said. A lot of us are doing research on the profession because we all know a science to sales and we all have to move past the author of the book. I hope you didn't do this, Jason. The author of the book who says, here's how I did it for 30 years at IBM. So this is the way everyone should do it. Yeah. Do we need to do some edits on that book? Idea here is, what we study is, hey, let's actually get some real research behind what separates high performers from everyone else. Let's get some real data driven. Let's look across multiple industries before we just throw out these generalizations of here's what success for sales is. Can we get some data to back that up? And we're finding some really counterintuitive things. For example, and I'll just be quick because I don't want to bore your audience to death. with research. But for example, we have found that average performers, this goes back to sort of where my passion for different kinds of my research passion, average performers actually do consistently follow a sales methodology. Go talk to a sales leader and they say, if we could just get our people to follow the methodology. And it's like, you know what? That's actually not the problem. Average performers are doing it. The problem is they're doing it in every single interaction and situation that they're in. And what we found high performers are doing on average is using 3.2 different sales methodologies. So do they use Challenger? Yep. Do they use spin and consultative? Yep. Do they use product focused selling? Yep. The key is they're doing it in the right situations. And so the sort of bad news to sales leaders is, hey, I know you struggled getting your people to adopt one methodology, but you really got to get them to be chameleons and adopt a couple of them. Because imagine a coach standing in front of their team saying, hey, gang, tonight in the game, no matter what, we're going to run the same play over and over again. Right? That's madness. They're not going to buy into that, especially your top salespeople. When you say we have a new training coming out, that's their reaction. It's like, oh, you're telling me to run that play no matter what, and I'm just not going to do it. And so this sort of, we have to start thinking in terms of adaptability, and the military calls it systematic adaptability. We don't want them to wing it. We just want them to make choices within the system. So let's teach a system of selling that has different approaches, put the customer in the middle, and then let's make sure we make decisions, if then kinds of decisions that drive us to the right methodology. So we have a ton of research on that, sort of looking at how do you do it, what works well, those kinds of things. And then my other one, I was just writing this research study up this morning, and this would be the last one I'll share unless you want to know about others. But we actually had managers rate salespeople following an interaction with a customer. They did things like, did they open the meeting well? Did they, you know, ask the right questions? Did they tell the right stories? What'd they do? Everywhere that the manager put the poor performance or, you know, a poor rating, we said, tell us why. Do you think it's because the seller doesn't know how to do it? Or is it that they know how to do it, they just missed that they should have done it in that situation? Does that make sense? We called it a type one mistake. I just don't know how to do it, versus a type two mistake. I know how to do it. I just didn't do it in those situations. Or I chose the wrong tactic, right? Like I should have used this objection handling tactic and I used another objection handling tactic. And so what we found was across all the pours, in terms of everywhere a manager rated their sales rep as poor, it was 21% of the mistakes or the pours were because the rep didn't know how to do it. 79% was because the manager said, my rep knows how to do it. They just missed the cue. They missed the trigger that says, dude, this is what you should have done. And now when you bring that back to sales training never talks about the when. We just talk about the how. Like, this is how you handle an objection. This is how you ask good questions. This is how you... And we never say that here's when you do that. Here's what you should be looking for. So again, we study the military a lot in this situational awareness, sort of reading what's going on around you and looking for the clues that says, hey, the clues are usually there to tell you what path to go down, but we're not training the salespeople to do that. So that's another area we sort of spend a lot of time on, is this idea of awareness. What does awareness look like in a sales meeting? How do you foster it? How do you build it? Because if they're not aware of what's going on, that triggers them to kind of go down the one size fits all path that we've been talking about today.
Yeah. And that's really interesting, because obviously I spent a lot of time in sales, but what some people don't know is that I also spent a bunch of time with the military in my adult life as a civilian contractor. And what I saw from my coworkers as well, and from the military, is that situational awareness, the people who are really good, especially in the field, in some rough situations, situational awareness is the key difference, usually life and death. In sales, I can think of countless examples of times where the salesperson just didn't pick up what was being said or not said, and then just kept going, or said the wrong thing and basically shot themselves in the foot. I can see that. And I love what you said too about the 3.2 different sales processes or strategies or tactics or methodologies in that. And that's one of the challenges I've always had, which is, okay, I call it authentic persuasion. And I wrote my book, but my book is also general, which is, here's some general fundamental principles, when and how and what exact steps you do. That's just it depends, right? Like, you're a human dealing with a messy, scared, confused human, right? Like, there is no, we're going to run the same play over and over again. That's how you lose the game. That's how you make buyers who are used to seeing the same play being played every time. And they're like, we're tired of it. Like, this right. isn't helping us.
Yeah. So those are just examples of research that's going on in our programs and programs across the country. So again, my sort of another call to your audience is, hey, if you're willing, because our struggle is getting access to data, getting people that will let us survey their salespeople and then give us some performance data, or did they win that deal or not, so that we know what the outcome was to be able to correlate actions to outcomes. We need help with that, right? That's a struggle. So if you have folks on your in your audience that says, hey, I'm game for, you know, letting you talk to my people or survey my people or look at some data. Yep. And we typically get payback. We'll do a report and say, here's what we found. And usually our companies that have done some research with us are repeat customers, because they're like, hey, that was insightful for us that you were able to sort of show us what's going on in our business that we didn't realize was happening. And then in exchange, we typically write these things up in academic journals that no one in your audience should ever read. I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy, but that helps us, right? Because we have to publish research to sort of continue to be relevant to our peers.
Well, I appreciate all of that, Lef, and especially the stats, the data, the involvement, you know, from companies who maybe they don't necessarily want to sponsor, they don't want students, but they want to learn more. They're open to the survey data so they can hear what others are doing successfully. I love all that. And of course, the work that you're doing with the future generations just excites me beyond words. And side note, when I wrote my book, I didn't say, here's the way I've done it for 30 years. Here's what I've seen for myself and the 1,000+ people who came and went in sales in the companies I was involved with and what generally work. So I think I was kind of on the path of you guys. You're much more formal and structured, which I appreciate. So I know for people who are listening to this, that the FSU Sales Institute, I know that you have a link on there for research. There's all kinds of valuable content. I'm going to put the link in the show notes because the link is kind of awkward to just read it through. But if anyone's listening to this, you don't want to wait for that. Just Google FSU. So Florida State University, FSU Sales Institute, and it'll pop up. You can go straight to their business page and find out all that stuff. I also know that you are very active on LinkedIn. So if anyone wants to connect with you, you have a side project, you have other things that you do, but everyone wants to talk to you, they can look up Lef Bonney LinkedIn and find you as well. But Lef, thank you for coming on. Thank you for sharing all this. And again, like I said, thank you for the work that you're doing with the future generation of sales so we can help shift it from being this gross, dirty word in the mind of consumers and actually a profession. So I appreciate that and for you coming on the show.
Hey, and thank you, Jason, for letting us tell our story. That's our goal, is to tell the story out there that we have a good product. So come talk to us.
Yeah. And anything I can do to help promote stories like this, obviously that's what the world of sales needs. So thank you everyone for tuning in, and we'll catch you on the next episode of the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast.
Did you get some inspirations of ways to help your call center sales team win bigger, stronger, and faster? Hope you are fired up to scale your sales operations. If you got value from this podcast, please go in and leave a rating and review. Also, make sure to forward this episode to anyone else you know in the call center space. We appreciate your support in growing the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast family. And if you have any comments, ideas, or feedback, contact us at CutterConsultingGroup.com.